Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and joining me now for an update on New York City's affordable housing crunch and Mayor Bloomberg's progress toward alleviating it is the commissioner for the city's Department of Housing Preservation and Development, Commissioner Matthew Wambua. Commissioner, welcome to WNYC. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on with you.
So a few weeks ago, we did a call-in segment about the new micro-unit project that the city has proposed to create smaller apartments. And I said at the time that the design submissions need not have closets because the presentation model we saw in the newspaper didn't have closets. But that's not at all a requirement for the design submissions, and we issued a correction. Could you remind us why Mayor Bloomberg and you are now talking about really, 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 really small apartments in New York as if we didn't have really, really, really small apartments in New York?
Absolutely. So, as you mentioned, this summer we've launched our micro-unit pilot, which is also known as the Adapt NYC program. In short, the objective of the pilot program is to develop a new model of housing which reflects the city's changing demographics. I think as a number of folks probably had made reference to on your show before, currently we have a significant misalignment between the size of households and the existing household stock in the city. As an example, the city has 1 million studios and one bedrooms, yet there are 1.8 million one and two person households. So with our micro-unit pilot, what we're essentially doing is recognizing the current and the growing need for more affordable small apartments in New York City. And towards that end, we've issued a request for proposals to design and to develop a building of potentially an entire building of micro-units on 27th Street and First Avenue on the Lower East Side.
How do you keep even the micro-units, if we're talking about just a couple of hundred square feet, let's say, for a very small apartment, how do you keep even those affordable? Because I would imagine there'll be a higher density of units on any given one of those lots. And, you know, landlords, if it's an unregulated market, are going to get what they can for them. So how do you keep the rents low and keep this from being very profitable for the developers at the expense of those looking to spend less money for less space?
Ultimately, affordability is going to matter in terms of the RFP, and we do think that we're going to be able to achieve affordability in a number of ways. First of all, at least 20% of the units we anticipate are going to be low-income units, income-restricted low-income units, and the reason we expect that is because we think that developers, as is almost always the case, are going to be looking to get 421A real estate taxes, tax benefits, and the receipt of 421A real estate tax benefits, a precedent to that is the provision of 20% affordable housing.
That's so the 80-20 provision for
exactly.
Any development that wants that tax break.
Exactly. So we think that we're going to start likely with a minimum threshold of 20% income-restricted low-income units and probably go up from there, but at least that will be the threshold that we'll be working with. Additionally, even for the non-restricted, income-restricted units, those are units that are also going to be subject to rent stabilization. So in many respects, that will help attenuate, obviously, the ever-increasing climb of market rents. And then lastly, I think that on the market-based rent setting, what I would say is that because these units are smaller than other regular studios or than other comparable studios that are larger, our expectation is that they're going to be at a lower price point than a unit that pretty much has the exact same finishes, comparable location, but is larger.
I know you just put out this RFP, request for proposals, for this the other day, but how many of these micro units do you expect to be built? Because I'm thinking about the context of this. Mayor Bloomberg has been in office for coming on 11 years, going to be 12 years, obviously, at the end of 2013 when he leaves office. And he has had this longstanding promise to create 165,000 units of affordable housing by the end of 2014. So how is this kind of an end game proposal? Because it's really hard to create 165,000 units of affordable housing. So let's put up a lot of really small units, a lot of which will be affordable, you know, at the end here, and we're going to get to 165,000. Does it have anything to do with that?
Wow, Brian, that is so cynical. No, it doesn't. It is a good question, but it doesn't have anything to do with that. I mean, honestly, we think that the current regulatory regime is one that is not particularly responsive to the changing demographic needs in the market. And so what we're looking to do, the real objective here is to issue a pilot, to be able to utilize that pilot to test the feasibility of this model, to see if it is both economically feasible in terms of the underlying finances of the building, as well as to test whether there is significant market demand for this kind of product. To the extent that we're successful in establishing it as a successful model, then what we're looking to do is likely consider more broad-based regulatory changes, more sweeping regulatory changes that would facilitate the creation of micro-units throughout the city, and, of course, in appropriate neighborhoods. So it's
It's a pilot at this point.
Exactly. So it's a pilot at this point to establish feasibility and to establish a platform for potential future regulatory change.
And realistically, were you going to say a number of affordable micro units by the end of next year?
Well, my guess is that we're going to see this pilot through, and that whatever micro units we ultimately generate are going to be generated through this pilot. And based on how robust the response is from the market, both on the developer side as well as on the demand side from residents, we'll either consider issuing other pilots and or move towards some regulatory, broader-based, systemic change.
Are you going to make it to 165,000 affordable units created or preserved by the end of next year?
So, yes, we are. I think that in terms of the mayor's housing plan, the takeaway of the storyline is that while we, as HPD, are obviously continuing to face capital constraints, particularly on a federal budgetary side, the housing plan remains on track and it remains on schedule, and we should be able to make it to 165,000 units by the end of June 2014. In terms of where we are right now, to date we've financed approximately 141,000 units, which gets us 85% of the way there. More specifically, in 2012, which just ended our 2012 fiscal year ended in June, we were able to finance about 16,500 units, which exceeded our annual targets by about 2,000 units, which was obviously gratifying for us, but particularly given the fact that we're still in a real estate and capital market environment that, while improving, hasn't as of yet fully recovered.
Right. Well, since the financial crisis and the housing bubble burst, and that's one aspect. But, you know, I've asked your predecessors as HPD commissioners about whether new affordable housing can keep up with what's being lost through the Mitchell-Lama and rent stabilization programs fading. And I wonder your position on that. Can you actually do it? Can you actually do anything other than run in place with the either expiration or the fading of what were the bedrock affordable housing programs of past decades?
Well, if you take into consideration the entire panoramic of affordable housing, including in that rent stabilization, then your point is well taken, which is in the aggregate, to the extent that you've got rent-stabilized units matriculating into the market, even with the production of 165,000 units, the preservation and the new construction of 165,000 units over the duration of 10 years, you're still going to have some net loss in terms of the overall portfolio of affordable housing. And that's unfortunate. That's not our goal, and that is going to happen even with the rent regulatory changes that occurred recently, in which the deregulation threshold was raised to 2,500. Now, that said, what I do think is fair to note is that there's a big difference between affordable housing or income-restricted housing for demographics that can't afford housing and housing with rents that are cheap. We clearly need housing with rents that are cheap, and hence there's great value to the rent-stabilized stock. However, what we do provide is something very different than just rent-stabilized stock. I mean, the kind of stuff that gets produced through the mayor's housing plan is in essence, affordable housing that is income restricted and that ultimately benefits those who are most in need, whereas unfortunately, that is not necessarily the case with simply rent-regulated housing. So, you're right, but I would like to differentiate between rent-regulated housing and what we are producing.
I understand. There's a federal investigation and bribery charges against one former and one current HPD official. Five people in total have been arrested, and there's an open investigation, so I understand that you can't comment directly. But how much does the investigation into bribery in exchange for endorsements for HPD construction contracts relate to this new effort from City Council to expand transparency for the agency? And how much should people worry about, you know, whether the public interest is really at heart here if this kind of thing was found?
Well, the first thing I'd say with respect to the bribery allegations and the two employees is that that's unbelievably unfortunate. It's something that we find disgusting as an organization. It's something that we have zero tolerance for, and we will continue and have always been committed to working with DOI, working with the police and with the investigators to always ensure that integrity of process and integrity of personnel is maintained here at HPD. And so there's no tolerance for it. I would also like to add, like, this is an organization of 2,100 folks who are incredible public servants who have committed themselves to the provision of affordable housing and the creation of quality housing for New Yorkers and take great pride in what they do. And yes, at times we've got bad apples, but that is not necessarily indicative of the folks that are here, and it's certainly not indicative of metastasized corruption. Secondly, with respect to the bill that was recently passed, the data collection bill, I don't think there really is a connection between the two folks that were recently arrested and the data collection bill. I'm not positive how that connection mm-hmm. would necessarily be made.
All right. So we will leave that there, and we will leave the whole thing there, except to ask, you're in your second year as commissioner now. Anything else in your agenda that you want to highlight that you think is really important, and how will you define success between now and the end of next year when your term would presumably expire?
There's a couple of things. I think that ultimately, as we begin to approach the conclusion of the housing plan, one of the challenges that we collectively have is we're trying to frame the lessons that have been learned through the housing plan. And we're attempting to shape the narrative surrounding the legacy of the mayor's housing plan. And there's a number of storylines, particularly compelling storylines, that contend with the success of the plan. But I think the most obvious one, the most compelling one, is that the housing plan has served as an incredible catalyst and engine for economic development and neighborhood investment. And that's evidenced by the fact that for every dollar we have spent in direct capital subsidy, both HPD and HCC, we've basically been able to leverage about $3.40 in private investment. And that means to date we have spent $4.4 billion in direct capital subsidy, which has been translated into leveraged total investment of $19.4 billion across the city. Additionally, we've been able to create pretty much one construction job for each one of the units that we've financed. And probably most impressive is the fact that the housing plan has been successful in rebuilding entire neighborhoods, most notably Harlem, the South Bronx, and East New York. In the South Bronx alone, there are entire regions, entire community boards in the South Bronx where the housing plan starts. The units that we have financed account for approximately 20% of the entire occupied housing stock. So I think that speaks to much of what we've been able to accomplish and also speaks in many respects to what we're going to be looking to do moving forward. First and foremost, we're going to look to complete the housing plan. And as I think I'd referenced at the beginning of the call, we're anticipating that we're going to be able to do it on time. But there are a number of other objectives that we're going to be focusing on over the course of the last 18 months. In addition to completing the plan.
And we have about 30 seconds left.
Got it. We are going to be expanding our supportive housing production for homeless and disabled populations, moving from 500 units per year to 1,000 units per year. We're also going to be focusing on a lot of large-scale new construction projects, including Arvern East, Melrose, Seward Park, Hunter's Point. And we're also going to focus on finishing up this micro-units pilot.
Well, good luck on all of it, and thank you very, very much for coming on today. We really, really appreciate it. Matthew Wambua, the commissioner for New York City's Department of Housing Preservation and Development. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Brian. Absolute pleasure being with you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll begin a summer series on being a summer intern, experience or exploitation. Stay with us.